E2, number 12A.
So here the question of method. When a writer writes a book, what goes on? He has somehow an idea, and that idea he has in mind, not on paper. And usually when one has an idea in mind, it is just a bang-on idea which seems to be so clear and simple, but the moment he begins to write about this idea and to present this idea, he has to use a lot of words in order to convey a mental idea to the reader through printed, to the printed word. And so what he has to do is to present that idea from various angles so as to make it more or less foolproof, that the reader, if he is willing to read as what is stated there, to catch that idea in its definite identity. And so the writer has not just the possibility of stating something just in a half a sentence or just in two or three words. He has to write about it and has to write paragraphs and paragraphs in order that the other one, the reader, can catch what he wants to convey. Therefore, he has to use various renderings in order to bring out this simple, straight idea. The reader, therefore, must not just read terms. He must read tones. He must read a subject and not terms. And this is the reason why, then, like here, as we epitomize each chapter, we find various renderings, as I have just pointed out in the Tomen and Eucharist, various renderings using different terms. But the reader who listens spiritually to the subject that doesn't read English words, he always hears the same tone. So we are never going to quarrel over the wording of something as long as that wording of something brings out the exact tone. The tone cannot change, should not change. That's something that the author had in mind and wants to convey. So that is very exact. But the way to put it into words is something else. There you have to vary your terms in order to bring out the tone. All right. So here we had it in Christ. You could see the tone is that the seeker who at the point of prayer has to have certain spiritual qualities in order to approach God, that he too must undergo, so to say, the requirements of the Christ, which says you can't approach God just with any mentality. You have first to fulfill certain demands of the Christ by laying down false concepts, or else you can never enter heaven, you can never be atoned with God, never to be reconciled with God, never to be at one with God. You see, I speak quite a long time, and always I say just one thing. Yes? Now, what you have in marriage, you have read various things there. The one was that I said that marriage shows really the outcome of the preceding chapter is an exaltation of everyday life. You get the sense that here now we are speaking about the outcome of the Christ, when we fulfill the demands of the Christ and atone with God, then something new is coming out, the result, Christianity, and that result is that it exalts our everyday life. I put it in other terms, perhaps you have taken this one, where I said it is the demonstration of a higher sense of humanhood. You see, completely different terms, but the tonality is the same. It's again outcome. Demonstration is always outcome, never cause. It is the demonstration of what? A higher sense of humanhood. It's a higher sense in the human, an exaltation in the human. Or I said towards the end of the book, we wed ourselves more and more to an ever higher sense of things. And you can hear in each passage here, you get a so-called comparative sense. It's never really the superlative that is indicated in this chapter. It is a step-by-step exaltation. It's always the higher, the better, as a comparative sense grammatically. Or I said, we find ourselves manifesting a higher standard of humanhood. I said, the more we base ourselves on the spiritual, the more we obtain lasting and permanent results. You could see, the more, the more. Again, the comparative sense. So the subject in here seems to be, in the tonality, to show that the demonstration that we get here as the outcome, really, of the preceding chapter, the demonstration, say, of a higher sense of humanhood. So let's take that down so that we have a common ground to talk about. Let's say demonstration of a higher sense of humanhood. All right, like this. But don't be discouraged if you have put something else in it, as long as it brings out the tone. Then we come to the next chapter, Christian Science versus Spiritualism. And there perhaps you have had difficulty in listening to the text. Anyway, that's what I saw over at the West Coast seminar, that here many of the students didn't get the tone. And this is perhaps just because one is used too much in some of the Christian Science phraseology, which has a lot to do with reality, unreality. And so many of the students here just said, here it is shown what is real and what is unreal. Or even they said, here is shown reality versus unreality. And if one hasn't read my text very with spiritual sense and with a listening ear, you could have arrived at that conclusion that I would say that. But that would be completely wrong. That tone would be completely wrong. So if you have put here something like reality or reality versus unreality or so, then I must say this is wrong. You have read wrongly. Why? Actually, that chapter speaks a lot about what is real and what is not real, or what is unreality. But that is not the focal point in it. The focal point in it is how to know what is real and what is unreal. How to discover what is real and what is unreal. Can you see that I change the tone and say not the central point is not the question of reality, unreality? Though that chapter is full of presenting real and unreal, but the main point in that chapter is actually the scientific method of how to find out and to be able to distinguish what is real and what is unreal. Yes? So I will read a few passages from my book, and from there you can see how easily one could misinterpret what I said. See, I like to do that so that you get into the habit of reading better a text. Again, a side note, because I like to present method and not so much the actual result. You know, it is a common thing today that one finds out that people can neither listen nor read. It's the most interesting thing in our age where so much information is given to the world. At no stage in our human development so much information is given to everybody, and not only to a few chosen ones, like professors or so. Everyone can take part in the infinite information that is given over the mass media, but the point is that people have never been educated to listen and never educated to read. The fact is that if you give any paper or an article or an editorial to somebody and to a group of people and you say to them, read it and tell me what is the piece of it, you will find that very few will find what is the piece of it. They will tell you all the sidelines of it. This is because the method of interpretation and the principle of interpretation has never been taught. And so people cannot distinguish between information what is in the hierarchy of information the main point, what is secondary, what is at the third place and fourth place, and what is just embellishment, what is just illustration. Usually they take illustration as the main thing, because that's the easiest thing to catch. Whereas the immaterial principle behind it is that which is the most difficult to catch. But that's usually the main point. So each one should be aware of it and train himself consciously to be able to read rightly. And reading rightly means interpreting rightly. Interpreting rightly means to have a hierarchy of values in what one reads. Or if you don't have that hierarchy of meaning in your consciousness, then you get a false interpretation. It is just as if we would have the musical notes of a song that has three voices in it, the altitude voices in it, and you would sing in the first stroke the first voice, in the second stroke the second voice, and in the third stroke the third voice. Can you see that you wouldn't get the melody? And yet you would say, it's there. I only sang exactly what is there, but you were not taking into account the hierarchy, namely what is the first voice, the second voice, the third voice. And this is how a text is written. When we write the text, everyone has a big idea in view. That idea, say like prayer, takes perhaps 17, 18 pages to present, but it's still one simple, single idea, prayer. So that is the main tone in the hierarchy. And then you get a second hierarchy, namely the seven subjects of prayer, which have the same tone as the main idea. And afterwards you get the subtones of each prayer. Now if one doesn't see that, one reads and takes somewhere a subtone as the most important thing, because it appeals to us, because it at that very moment one reads it, it perhaps speaks to us in a comforting way, and then we have already put our subjective interpretation into the text. And so one never gets really the structure of a text. I could easily prove that, and you too. You have a textbook that is now nearly 100 years old, that is read every day by millions of people. I don't know, but I would say by a million of people. Over 100 years, people who have been in Christian Science for 20, 30, 40 years have loved that text and have read that text. And if you ask any one of those people, tell me, how does Mrs. Eddy build up the subject of prayer you are quite sure that none of them knows it. None of them knows that line of reasoning in that chapter. Why? Because we cannot read. Reading means not reading words. Reading means reading spiritual tones. And in order to be able to read spiritual tones, one first has to have within oneself a completely restructured consciousness, namely to be restructured out of the human system of reference into the divine system of reference, which does no more read in words, but only listens in tones, in categories, and in tones. And when one is doing that, then you read a text and it just begins to be as easily to be recognizable as if you read a novel. There, when you read a novel, and it may be 600 pages, and you read it diagonally, in one evening, if you can read diagonally, you know afterwards the order of that novel, of that text. You know it. Why? Because it's written in the human system of reference, and therefore it is written in that reference which we usually have encultured within us through all our life. But when we come to the Bible and the textbook, it is different. Those books are written by God, by the divine mind, therefore by the divine system of reference, and therefore can only be read through the divine system of reference. And if we have not cultured within ourselves the divine system of reference, we cannot read the textbook. And then we read a book that is written in the divine system of reference with the human system of reference, and that never understands each other. Only like understands like. So the proof of what we say you have, because you can ask anyone of all those earnest students of Christian Science, tell me, please, how is, say, the text of physiology built up? And you can be quite sure that they don't know. And this is proof that we have not read the textbook the way it should be read. Yeah? But the moment we know the system of reference, we have no difficulty in reading it structurally. I remember the time when I was going through the textbook and seeing the layout of the textbook, the structure of the textbook, that I could sometimes read a chapter, a long chapter, and practically on the first go, see the whole layout of it. I remember, for instance, Footsteps of Truth, which is very big and has two big parts in it, first part and second part. And each part is written in the 7x7 layout, so that you have 7x7, 49, and this twice in the chapter, 98 tones. 98 tones. And I read that chapter, and practically on the first go, I could see the whole layout. I was so surprised that I didn't quite trust myself. So I had one other student who I knew, and there were not many students who had studied the synonymous term close enough and cultured them close enough to be trustful. And so I went to that student, it was Betty Schurter in Zurich, and said to her, "Look here, will you make me a favor? Read that chapter and see if you can find the layout of it." And she read it over a weekend. And only at one place out of the 98 tones, we had a little difference in the breaks. Can you see what happens when we culture our consciousness in reading tones and not words? Then the whole structure just falls into place. All right. This was a side remark about reading and interpretation, because we said here in the Word as Science, the chapter on Christian Science versus Spiritualism, that many may have transferred into this box that it has to do with reality and unreality, and taking that from my writings. Now, I read what I have written in the book, and I say that it gives an explanation of what is real and what is unreal. Now, can you see? Now you can put the accent on explanation, or you can drop that and say it is about unreal and real. That is a choice that the reader makes. And before he makes that choice, he should be aware if that choice is right or wrong. And naturally, if something then repeats itself, and I would go on, and would perhaps at the end of the book say that it gives a clear analysis of the nature of God and reality, then again you can hear that it has to do with an analysis of what is God and reality. Again, a method of how to arrive at an understanding what is real and unreal, and not so much depicting the reality of the real and the unreality of the unreal. That's something that will be dealt with in the Christianity chapters, but not at this point. And that I would say here, that it explains that spirit and matter never linger, that it explains the way, and you have a sense that actually the tone here is of giving a scientific explanation or method of how to arrive at an understanding and a knowledge of what is real and unreal. You see that? So in this box, say, we can't just put down reality or reality versus unreality. This would not give the right tone. It is actually an explanation, as you could put it, a scientific explanation of what is real. Yes. And just to indicate it quickly, you see, in this chapter, you have, for instance, those big questions. How can we distinguish between an idea and illusions? See, so the question is not idea versus illusion. The question is, how can we distinguish the methodology of how to know what is real and unreal? Therefore, that whole chapter is full, for instance, of presenting the divine diagnosis through the mind reading, through divine mind reading. That takes a big part, because it shows only through the divine mind reading. You cannot be fooled about what you see and what is reality. Divine mind reading alone can uncover to you what is real and unreal. Otherwise, she shows how many things, how many so-called wonderful phenomena are presented, and you think that because they are unusual phenomena, that they must be divine phenomena, and she explains them and says, they are not divine, they are really phenomena of mortal mind, of spiritualistic phenomena, and have nothing to do with reality, they have only to do with unreality. So, make a good mark on that, you see, that this chapter has to do with the scientific method of how we can analyze, uncover, and then annihilate error, or how to analyze what is real and unreal. Now, let's go through those four boxes vertically, and see what does it convey spiritually. The moment we consider these four chapters as depicting the Word in Christian Science. Therefore, in order to do that, we actually should ask ourselves now, what is the common denominator that goes right through these four chapters? which would be asking, what shall we put on the top there as the in where we have the index I, the word, and so what is this vertical all about? And in my textbook, my structure book, I think I have written just one thing always. Did you put that in this index here? That it is the approach to God. You have that. All right? So we put here approach, but leave enough space open so that we can elaborate on that. Approach to God.